Hi everyone, Philip Taylor here. This is the Financial Blogger podcast, and I have with me today Carrie Hasha. Carrie's from PocketYourDollars.com and author of the book by the same name. Say hi, Carrie.
Hi, everybody.
So the Financial Blogger podcast is just a way for us to get to know some of the financial bloggers out there, current stars, rising stars, and learn the motivation behind what they're doing, and also get some insights into how they're running their business, their blog. So, Carrie, welcome. Maybe first start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and your blog.
Yeah, well, my blog, every blog has a backstory, right? So you've got to hear that. In June 2006, my husband and I had over $50,000 in debt. And if you remember back to those days, it was during the boom. And we decided that we wanted to get out of debt. And so we decided we want to get out of debt. We want to stay out of debt for the rest of our lives. And we just set out to do that, not even really knowing how or what. We weren't following Dave Ramsey or anything like that. We just decided we were going to do it. It took us 2.5 years to pay off that debt. And when we got out of debt, it was November 2008. Well, that was the beginning of the tank of the economy. And people that I knew were losing their homes to foreclosure. They were losing their jobs. And I was hearing all this chatter on Facebook, like, I don't know how we're going to get by. I don't know what we're going to do. And I was like raising my hand. I know something about this. I know how to live on nothing because we just did it to get out of debt while all the rest of you were booming. We were tightening our belts. And so I literally felt compelled from the inside to start a website. Honestly, it was a community service is how I viewed it, to help my friends, my family, some people I knew from church, sharing money-saving information that I had learned in our journey getting out of debt. And my vision had been that I would also talk about the actual getting out of debt part. How did we do that?
Gotcha.
What mindsets did we have to change? Because what's interesting is June 2006 wasn't the first time we had sort of said, this is our time, we're getting out of debt. Right. I just found a journal I wrote in 2003 where I wrote, 2004 is our year of getting out of debt. Except it wasn't. It was our year of getting more into it, and same with 2005. So what was it? I wanted to share what really had happened that allowed us to pivot for real and finally to do it after we'd tried and failed so many other times.
Gotcha. Great backstory. So when you started the Facebook, it sounded like you started it wasn't a Facebook community, but what it was some kind of community. Did the blog start at that same time, or?
Yeah, so it was the middle of March 2009, and I was working full-time by day. My husband was a grad school student studying at night, and I'm like, after I put my kids to bed, I'll just do a blog. So I just started. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know anything. I just started. What happened is I have this kind of driven part of my personality and a little competitive. So two things. My husband is watching the news, and I live in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and they said, how are you fighting back against the recession? Send us your ideas. And my husband nudged me. You should email them. And so I did, and 10 days after I started my website, they did this feature story about me and this blog that really had no content, but they did that. And then I felt I had this confidence, so then I reached out to a newspaper reporter, and I knew a money-saving thing he didn't know about, and I hooked him up with some subjects to talk about it, and I began networking in the media. In that first year I did my website, I did about 100 media appearances that year between TV and radio. It just was wild crazy, and that's how, in all honesty, all folks are into search engine optimization, and I need to be smarter about that. What's really worked for me is I've been able to just nail this media thing and build a really solid network of contacts that has increased my credibility, obviously then my audience. And in time, I realized you could make money blogging. I didn't even know people made money online when I started.
Right.
It was several months later before I even knew you could. And I'm fortunate that 10 months after I started my blog, it was financially successful enough that when I got laid off from my job, and my husband was still in school, so he wasn't working, we just transitioned into self-employment, and our blog has supported our family then now for 3.5 years.
Did you say 10 months?
10 months.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? From somebody who knew nothing about how to monetize a website, that 10 months later it was making a full-time salary. Wild.
That is wild.
It was a crazy time because, remember, I was working full-time. I had a six-week-old and a just under 2-year-old when I started, and so it A lot of effort. The thing is, people might say, oh, that was like a get rich quick. Well, if you knew how much effort I put into it and yeah. how stressful it was for my whole family, because this is what my days look like when I started. And I'm not trying to be a big martyr. I'm just telling you the honest truth. How did that work? I was the chief operating officer at a nonprofit, so I didn't have a mindless job. I got up, 5:30, 6 o'clock, worked for an hour to 90 minutes on the blog, then headed out the door to work, did a full day of work, came home, cooked dinner, got my kids to bed, 7 o'clock, sat down at the computer again, and worked on the blog until after midnight every night, and I just 4 or 5 hours of sleep per night for those first 6 months, keeping up with the niche that I picked about sharing this money-saving stuff. It was way more time-consuming than I imagined. And if I would have known how intense it would have been, I probably wouldn't have started. Mm-hmm. And it just took so much time. And then learning the monetization, learning about websites, and then fielding all the media stuff, I ended up with regular radio segments and TV segments and having to produce that and run around and buy props. And it was a lot of work. God bless my family for putting up with me during that time. Uh-huh. Yeah,
that's incredible. And I want to definitely get into how you more about that media, more about the revenue models that you chose. But just backing up a little bit more, what can people expect when they go to your blog? And maybe talk about how that might have transitioned over time.
Right. Basically, what you're going to find are two types of things. One is the most popular part of it, taking what's on sale at a variety of stores, about a dozen different stores, nationals like Target or Walmart, what do they have on sale this week, and helping you locate any available coupons for those items, and then giving you commentary about whether these items are really a good sale price or not. Sort of, I talk from the peanut gallery about that. And then just the other component would be legitimate freebies that you can find on the internet or really amazing deals. I don't post anything that I haven't tracked to make sure this really is a bona fide good price, it's a good product, I'm doing all of that legwork. I will say the thing that I've wanted to transition to time and again is the evergreen content. I will get to it in a minute, but I ended up writing a book last year and I might not have written the book if I would have been able to get to that content on my blog, but right. I kept finding that the deals and the freebies, it's so time sensitive and it's just got such a short shelf life, it takes so much energy to keep up. And I have a staff now of people who work for me and we have a whole system. We have manuals about like formatting guidelines and editorial guidelines, and it's, we built like a small newspaper, small publication. Yeah. We have systems and structure in place so that I can be focused on the business development side of it, networking, managing relationships, the media, marketing. Lately it's been stuff related to the book, that kind of promotional stuff. And then I have staff who can write things that don't need my voice, that are just fact-based. I mean, if something is on sale, there's not a lot of personal voice in that, and so somebody else can write that.
Gotcha. Ooh, that's awesome. You are a go-getter.
There's something in my personality that just is like determined, yeah.
Wow, this is the fastest blog success story I think I've ever seen. Yeah. This is incredible. So the deals and the ways to save money for people's daily spending, you see this as sort of helping them, similar to you, on their path toward getting out of debt.
Right? I do, because when we decided to get out of debt, we never got a second job. We actually took the money we had. I mean, we weren't making loads and loads, but two middle America, at the time, we both were working, middle America incomes, and we said, let's try this on the expense side first. And so we found all these different ways to reduce expense, and the more I would talk about it, the more I knew people around me wanted to know that too. And so I began to share that, and I get stories and examples. Probably the most powerful reader's sort of story about how this has impacted them, a woman emailed me and said, I'm so grateful I found your website, and with the savings, I'm actually able now to buy my medicine for lupus. She had lupus, couldn't afford her medicine. I found ways to save money now so I can afford to buy the medicine that I need.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great story. That's a great story.
But you know, can I say one thing though? You know, where this niche of financial blogging is concerned, it's interesting. So my blog has been about deals, but if I could just download my brain to the internet, which I can't do, I actually have to type up the words, I would be writing so much more about how I'm instilling financial values in my kids and the day-to-day money conversations my husband and I have. You know, those kinds of things, that's, I care about deals and how people say money, but my real passion is in more the tried and true personal finance. And I will just say that I'm experiencing this tension as I'm trying to shift more to that. Mm-hmm. And in terms of creating the capacity in my life to write more of that content, it's most people in this space are kind of one or the other, and I really want to be able to do both.
Yeah, yeah, it is difficult to do both. You know, it sounds like you found sort of what worked financially for the blog early on, and you you know, you did apply the 80-20 rule to that, right? You hammered that versus focusing on areas that weren't as beneficial toward you.
Exactly.
Now, doing this full-time, it sounds like that was early on, that was a pretty big goal for you, right?
You know, it didn't become my goal, I guess, about 4 months before I went full-time doing this. My dad lived out of state and he came to visit, and I was just running around crazy, and he pulled me aside and said, "You're like going nuts. Like, you can't even keep your head straight. You need to stop." And I said, "Dad, did you know you can make money online?" He's like, "You can?" And he said, "Well, then," and he really encouraged me, and he said, "Well, then you better figure out how to make enough that you can quit the other thing you're doing." And it helped me sort of there was some validation that I needed in that. But there was some validation I needed in that to encourage me to go forward. And so then I paired back to part-time in my day job, which I knew would position me for layoff. And I'm grateful I got laid off because I was able to have COBRA for our health insurance for the first period of time, which helped that transition. And my husband and I did a couple of things. When I went full-time, we knew if this doesn't work out, I can get unemployment. So that just mentally, we never did take unemployment, but right. We knew I could. Okay. And two, we had said, we built up our emergency fund even more before we went, and we said, let's do this for 3 months. And if we don't even make, if everything bottoms out and we don't make any money, let's try it for 3 months, and then we'll decide what we're going to do. So it really helped me in making the leap to feel like I don't have to do this forever. I know it's just a time-limited thing, and there's a finite amount of risk my family's going to absorb, and it won't sink us or bankrupt us if this flops. We're just going to try it and see. And so I needed to box in the risk in order to make that leap, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Wow, this sounds like a good content for the Part-Time Money podcast, the other podcast that I do. It's a very similar story to what I went through, where we sort of had a transitional period where we saved a lot and we had sort of a backup plan before we made that leap. So that's very wise of you. What about health insurance now? What do you do?
We buy our own. What was interesting, when I shopped for it individually, I wish I would have done this a lot sooner. I was so afraid of getting my own insurance. But there's only like 3 or 4 companies in the state of Minnesota that provide insurance. So I didn't go through a broker or anything. I went to each one of those companies' websites, found the available plans, and then just made a spreadsheet, you know, comparing the premiums and all of that and our expected expense. And we have kind of a hybrid. We have a high deductible, about $11,000, but it's not a true high deductible plan because we pay copays for office visits and we have a copay for prescriptions. So we do that, but then we don't qualify for a health savings account. But we have our own separate personal savings account that would cover our deductible. You know, God forbid, we actually need to tap into it.
Gotcha.
But I will say, I was so afraid of that moving into self-employment. And it wasn't nearly as, so I buried my head in the sand and I didn't want to deal with it. And it was not nearly as scary as I thought it would be once we got through it.
Wow, you sound just like me. The same story. Crazy.
Yeah, that's funny.
Let's talk about your site again. For those who are just starting a blog or having trouble getting traction, let's talk about how you got traffic to the site, and maybe touch on some of the media efforts, if that was a part of that.
You know, there's two things. You can get traffic to your site, and there are days I've had huge amount of traffic, but really at the end of the day, what you want to make sure you're doing is retaining people, right? Any good business is focused on customer retention. So we can talk about media in a minute, but I want to talk about what I did with each person who came to my site. When I started, anybody who left a comment, I said, I'm going to personally connect with them. I sent them not one of these automated emails like from a WordPress plugin. I personally emailed every person who left a comment for the first 6 months of my blog.
Wow.
Thanks for leaving a comment. I would say something about what they had said about, so they knew that it was like a human writing this. And then I would ask questions. How did you find me? What could I do to improve? And then I would ask, if there's any way that you can imagine helping to make this a better community, please do. And I know those efforts were so important. I've had people tell me, I used to want to quit reading your blog sometimes, and I never did because I felt like you'd notice. Like, you actually were so connected with who was there and who was talking that you would notice if I left, and so I stayed. And so I want to just say that people need to recognize you're connecting with people, and I was all about a community. And one other thing I did from the very beginning is I said, we're always going to talk about we. So you're going to hear me in this whole thing. I'm going to talk about we do this. And I didn't talk, it's a nails on a chalkboard to me when bloggers write about I this, my blog, my this, my that, because leadership is about building a community and building a team. And if you want people to follow you, you need to help them get into something that they can believe in. So I would talk about how we are going to do this together. We are a community that's having this impact on an annual basis. What should our goals be for this community?
Wow.
And really focused on that. And so people got like connected to the brand. So that's a little side tangent from the fact
that's gold. That's gold. Thank you for sharing that.
Right. You have to transfer because so, you know, I go on TV or I do radio and I was on TV early this morning talking about it's Valentine's Day and so talking about Valentine's Day stuff. But there's a couple of things I've learned about media. You have to get people who are watching TV or listening to the radio to convert into web traffic. It doesn't happen automatically. And so if you think just because you show up on some big name show that you're going to get a lot of traffic, you're wrong. It doesn't always happen that way. You have to give them a reason to go to your blog. And so I often have a reason because I'll have more of these tips can be found on my blog, right? That's usually the lead back. But if I were writing just about broader personal finance things, I would find a reason, have additional content or another ebook or something on my blog that I could ask the reporter to mention at the end of the interview. You know, this is Carrie Hosh with PocketYourDollars.com. You can go to our website to find more of this kind of information, some kind of push, and hope that then it hooks people enough to get them to want to come.
Gotcha. Awesome. So talk me through you said there was really a 10-month period before you jumped to full-time. So talk me through traffic, just traffic-wise, how you did during that period and sort of how the community growth was as well.
Yeah, that's a good question. I will say it's 4 years ago now, so it's not off the top of my head. But I can remember within the first few months seeing 1,000 visitors a day and feeling like, wow, that was really awesome. I remember when my FeedBurner email list hit 100. And I was like jumping up and down in the office. And I remember when I hit 1,000, you know, and I would set goals, 2,500 and whatever. And so by the time I went full time, you know, I don't remember. It was several thousand hits a day. I will say my biggest traffic days for me have typically been Black Friday and Cyber Monday because I'm talking about deals. I do a lot of media and I give them a reason to come to my website. Don't pay attention to what's in your inbox. I'll curate all of the best deals you need to pay attention to on my website. So I do that, and in that day, I might get like 20,000 hits in a day. So that's kind of where I've hit now, and this year I want to get up above. I want to break that ceiling. I've been there a couple of times.
And are they coming to the homepage or any specific deal page?
You know what? I generally drive traffic from my homepage. I've tried a few times with certain things to do, like PocketDogs.com. Like I thought today I could do /Valentine's. I don't know how effective any of that has ever really been. And I'm not very good at making targeted landing pages and all of that. If I were and I had a graphics person, you know, my husband or I could do that, that might be different. But I just drive them to my homepage, and then I have a slider box where I can feature some content. And I do, if I'm doing a big push on something, I do need to feature it on my homepage. Otherwise, I get just inundated with emails. I came to your page to look for this, and I couldn't find it. I also have been very mindful. I use a great search tool on my website called SwiftType. That's what powers the search. And I really like it because it gives me a great report. I get an email once a week. Well, two things. It has auto-populate. So if someone starts to type in something, it populates with these are blog posts that might answer that. So most people can find what they need that way. And I only get, say, 30 or 40 search queries a week where they don't get a response. And I get stats about what exactly they were looking for. And that's helpful to me. I sometimes go and write new blog posts, or I tag things differently if I know I have something but people couldn't connect with it. And I'm mindful of that.
That's a really slick tip.
It is, and I will say one of the things I've been mindful of, my background was in a nonprofit, but we were a web-based nonprofit, is the user experience of my website. I really, from a navigational perspective, the look and feel, I recognized early on, if I'm going to go on TV and I want to be public with this, I need a website that I'm proud of, that a TV station would be proud to put on air, and it doesn't look hokey and homemade. And so I last year I invested quite a bit of money and did an extensive redesign. And one of the things, you know, of course I said, what do I want the site to do and all of that, but I used a website called CSS Mania, and it's like a gallery of websites. And I went into CSS Mania and took each element, like header, main navigation, featured content. I made a list of all the elements of my site, and then I went to CSS Mania and just looked at hundreds of websites for just that one element, and just until I could see something that resonated with me. So then I could go back to my designer and say, I want it kind of like this, but not like that. And I had concrete examples, and then we were able to pull together a draft, and I did focus groups. I mean, I did a lot of things to really try and involve the community that uses this website. I looked at it as something, a remodel we were all part of, and making sure users felt like they still could get access to what they wanted. And I say that because I think sometimes bloggers are too self-centered, and they think from their perspective, not from their customer's perspective. Right. How do their users want, and how do their users navigate the information they have?
Talk a little bit more about how might you user tested that.
Yeah, you know what I didn't do, but I wish, because I've done it in other things. You can actually have, well, I'll take that back. When I just had screenshots, I first did a mock-up, just screenshots, having my graphic person just doing Photoshop what the mock thing would look like. No links worked. And I found a handful of people, I don't remember how many it was, about a dozen or so, I think, via my blog's Facebook page. And I sent them the link. I didn't tell them anything about it in advance. I just said, look at this for 5 minutes and then send me some feedback. And I had some specific questions, like, what did you notice first? What the things you like on the site right now, are they all here? And just some things that were kind of a gut check, because I knew everything had transferred over. But I heard from some people, well, this isn't there. And I was like, okay, something's wrong in the layout, because it is there, but people didn't see it. They didn't notice it. And so I did that, and then we made adjustments then. Well, it was still just on paper and not as expensive as having built it. The other thing is, we built into the budget of that project to launch early and then do another significant round of changes about 6 weeks later. Because I've learned in time, you will not get it right. people will use your website differently than what you think. And there are sites like Crazy Egg and others where you can get heat maps of how people are using your site and what they click on. And Google Analytics has some of that. And I looked at all that. And then we launched the site. And then I was always asking and collecting that feedback and then prioritized. And we made a round of changes right away for two reasons. One, so the audience really felt like I was listening, because that's really important. We're getting to it. We're collecting. We're going to make the most important changes right away. And obviously to improve the user experience. And then I keep trying to, I keep up with it. I mean, I set aside money and I make an annual budget for my business. And I have money set aside every year for website changes and modifications to keep up and be constantly improving.
How'd you find the people to do the work for you?
That's a great question. In Minneapolis, we had a word camp. There's actually a Google list that's WordPress developers. And I stumbled upon it, and through a Google search and then through that word camp, I met somebody who was really good. I had had a previous WordPress developer and I outgrew what he could do. But even with that, I Googled online the kinds of questions I should be asking somebody. And so I interviewed them. I checked references, because I think sometimes bloggers were just really trusting, right? I mean, I know you on Twitter, so for sure you're going to do a good job for me. Just because you think someone can do a good job doesn't mean they really will do a good job. And so do your due diligence before you hire someone. And then I put together specs and a contract, and I also put together a non-disclosure, particularly with my developer. I had him build some custom plugins for me, and I didn't want, he told me they were mine, but I wanted in writing that I owned them, and I wanted in writing that he could not disclose that to others exactly how we were doing some of this functionality on my site that I figured was going to look pretty cool to some other bloggers.
Nice.
And since then, he and I agreed, and he's packaged one of these plugins, and he's selling it, and he and I have a financial arrangement about that, and that's fine.
So just from a high level, for someone maybe getting started, you're on WordPress, you use a lot,
yes,
of the plugins, you have some custom plugins. Is there a particular theme that you use that you've modified?
Yeah, right now I'm running on Genesis.
Okay.
And I will say, I don't know very much about the technical stuff. Even when I was starting out, I found some other bloggers whose websites I liked. I emailed them, who built your site for you? And then, you know, I found my very first people that way, just networking with other bloggers via Twitter and Facebook and by emailing them. And so that's what I would encourage someone new to do. Find most bloggers, if you have a specific question, they'll help you. Don't ask them, will you mentor me? Because that's big, wide open. But if you say, who have you used for this? Do you know of a plugin that does that? Most everybody is willing to help, because we were all helped when we started.
Right. And we love talking shop, because our spouses are tired of hearing about it, right?
Exactly. You got it.
And we don't want to talk about that with our community necessarily all the time, because that's right. We want to stay on topic with them.
Right. Exactly.
You do something called open mic. And that, yes, looks to be wildly successful for you.
It
What's
is
going
huge.
On there?
Okay, so I do one. It's kind of a modified forum. People will sometimes say, you should add a forum to your blog because then people can talk and all of this. And my thought was, then I have to moderate more of that, and then people need logins, and I'd seen some flop. No. So I just do one blog post every Thursday morning, and I call it open mic. People can ask questions. They can share comments that are loosely on topic. I mean, something related to money or their household or, you know, something in that realm. And it's just a conversation. I try to stay out of it if I can. But in any week, I mean, we get on a low week 100 comments. On a good week, 300, 350 comments.
Amazing.
And it's a great community builder. And I've really gotten to know people. And the people I've hired to work for me all are people who've been active there. I'll email them and say, hey, I need help doing this. And I already know they're smart about it because I see them talking about it in the comments. Can I pay you to help me?
Gotcha.
So it served a multiple purpose. It's a funny backstory. It started because my website got hacked when I was on vacation once early on. and all my content was lost, and I had no backup. So I did a post for just one each day. Here's an open topic post. Y'all talk amongst yourselves. And then everyone said, can we keep doing that? That was great. And I also love it because readers will email me questions specific. Can you tell me how to save money on Berber carpet from, you know, this particular vendor? Very specific. And I don't want to have to deal with answering that level of specific question. And I'll often say, why don't you go ahead and ask in the open mic post? And usually somebody in the community will have a suggestion.
Yeah, and it's sort of a crowdsourcing everyone's solutions there.
Exactly.
It sounds like you were already sort of at a critical mass with your community already before opening that up. Any tips for someone who may want to have sort of make an attempt to do sort of an open mic deal like that, but may not have quite the community that they know would jump all over it like that?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that and have it flop. I'd hold off. What I would do instead is whatever topic you're writing about, make the last paragraph thought-provoking and ask questions. If there's one thing other people come to me and say is, how do you get so many comments on your blog? And I'm like, it's really simple. I ask questions. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes people are reading and you ask a question, they feel like, oh, I want to answer that. And then, you know, make your comment section easy for them to answer, but build conversation after your individual blog posts, and you'll get a sense of when people need something more. You know, when either some of them start to get off topic or you're getting emails about things that you don't really want to write a specific blog post to answer that, but you bet it's a question other people have. Okay, now you're probably at a time where you could try that. And I wouldn't maybe even do open mic every week if you don't have enough critical mass. Do it every other week or once a month. I tried something once and it flopped, and so I'll tell you about it so you don't do it. People would say, I have a hard time, like I remember we talked about ideas to save money on bridal showers a few months ago in an open mic. I wish it was easier to go back and find that. That's why you should have a forum. I hear that sometimes. So then I thought, well, maybe if I make some topic-specific open mics, then we could have them, like one about stuff related to pets or home maintenance or whatever, you know? And those just did not get – they basically flopped. And so I didn't do that. What I found worked better to try to generate very topic-specific conversation was for me to do a reader question and say – reader Susie Q, who emailed me, has asked this question about pet health insurance. Is it worthwhile? Blah, blah, blah. I don't even necessarily go and research the answer. What do you all think? What's your experience? And I found that when people feel like they're talking to a person, they're much better than just kind of throwing out their thoughts into nothingness. Gotcha. So I've had much better results with that. And it's an easy and quick way to make a blog post when you want content. Just grab a question and say, let's open it up to all of you. You all are really smart. What do you know? What's your experience?
Awesome. Awesome. Really quick before we move on to our last topic, I want to be I want to make sure I let you get out of here in time. Traffic-wise, what's the percentage direct versus referral versus search?
Good question. Goodness, I didn't look at that recently. I'm going to guess probably about 40% direct, about 30% referral, and then what does that leave? Probably about 30% search. Okay. But my site isn't the most optimized for search engines, and actually that's one of my goals this year. I just installed Yoast SEO plugin, and I'm really kind of focused on doing some more where that's concerned. And the referrals tend to come from the media appearances that I've done, because I always will provide them some web copy as well, so they can link to the video of the story and then have like two paragraphs that summarizes what I talked about with a link back to my site.
Okay, and I'm sure Facebook is big for you as well, referral-wise.
You know, it is, and I've really, over the last 6 months, tried a variety of different things to improve my Facebook strategy, and really have seen some great increases. I've done a few promoted posts that have worked really well. I know some people are against that. I'm not. But I, yes, on a good day, I mean, I will get, you know, thousands of people coming to my site from Facebook.
That's great. That's great. She has, I think you have like something like 25,000 followers there.
Yeah, it's almost, it's like 28,000, I think we just hit. So
it's probably another reason maybe why you don't need a forum is because there's a lot of engagement there, right?
That is exactly, that's exactly it. I appreciate that with Facebook. People can ask, other people can answer. And I put on my contact page on my website, you know, before you email me, don't forget that you can leave a comment and post something on our Facebook wall. And in fact, you might get a quicker answer if you do it there. So I noticed my quantity of emails dropped and more people are posting on my Facebook wall, which is good for lots of reasons, including their posting there helps my posts show up in their newsfeed for longer.
Gotcha. So there's a lot of other things I wanted to talk to you about, things like hiring your staff, things like how you manage your time. But I think probably what's on the biggest forefront of folks' mind, when you said up front, you went from 0 to 10 months and you're already full time. So we got to talk about how you're making money off your site. So tell people, you know, how do you earn revenue off of this blog that you've got?
Yep. So I earn revenue two ways. One is advertising. Google AdSense is my biggest advertiser. I'm also part of one other blog network. And I just have two 250 by 300 ads that run on every page. And those generate half of my revenue. So that is half. The other half comes from affiliate marketing. Because of the content that I'm talking about a lot, I'm talking about products. I'm referring people away from my site to either print coupons or to buy products that I recommend. And so it makes it really easy for me to use a referral link where I'm earning a commission for all of that traffic. And I've really gotten involved in that affiliate community and tried to learn a lot there so I can work smarter, not harder, with those referrals that I'm making. And so 50% of my revenue comes from there. I will say I do a couple of gravy things on the side. Like I do some public speaking. I've been doing a little freelance consulting. All that to me is gravy. It's not my bread and butter business model.
Gotcha. So the AdSense on the right side, just those two big blocks, that's on every page, and that's half your revenue. Yeah.
Half my revenue. And it's because
what does that do your month?
What?
What is that a month? What is that a month, those two blocks, the AdSense blocks?
Anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 a month.
Okay. And wow, that's pretty good with AdSense. Why choose it to keep it on the sidebar? Why not below the post or in the post?
I do have one under the post. It just doesn't do as well. I don't know. Yeah, and I will say I probably could optimize that some more if I wanted to take the time, and I haven't, because sort of it's working well enough. But I made a commitment early on to not over-ad, you know, like advertise, not to have all these banners and sidebars. So I said two, and that's it, and I'm done. And that's just what I've done. I will say what's interesting, the top ad is Google AdSense. The bottom ad is an ad network through Lifetime Moms, through it's a digital arm of Lifetime TV, A&E TV. And that doesn't pay as well, but I've gotten some good connections via that blog network that have, that have been good for me. And so my point, it's not always all about money. Sometimes there are non-tangible things
sure.
that you get in exchange, and you got to be mindful of the whole equation.
Yeah. And I think you have a great placement of advertising, like you said. All right, so let's delve, if you got more time, let's delve into affiliate marketing.
Right.
Because I think most people, when they blog, they sort of understand the AdSense content pretty quickly, get that, understand how to get that on their site. But what is affiliate marketing? You know, what are some of the networks out there that you can get involved with? How do those work? And just how do you get the offers onto your site, I guess?
Right. So affiliate marketing is the idea that you use a referral link, you know, like a special URL that has some tracking built into it. You post that on your website. It's all performance based. So when someone clicks on that link and then takes whatever the desired action is, it could be buying something, it could be providing their information and becoming a lead for an offer, it could be printing out a coupon, whatever the desired action is, I'm on the merchant or the retailer's part. If your reader does that action, you earn some money. And there are different terms. Sometimes you earn a percentage of a sale. Sometimes, you know, there's all these different ways each one works. So here's a couple of things you need to know. First, terminology. I am an affiliate, and a website retailer like Macy's.com or Amazon, they are a merchant. I say that because they email you all the time from these email addresses, affiliate at their company, so you can get mixed up and think they're the affiliate. They're not. You are. So you're an affiliate, they're a merchant. And the way that you get these special tracking links, for the most part, most large brands are part of an affiliate network. And so there's a number of large affiliate networks: Commission Junction, Linkshare, Share a Sale, Google Affiliate Network, and Pepper Jam are probably the biggest ones that most of our folks, oh, and the Bankrate, what do you call that, PT?
Card Synergy.
Yeah, there you go. And there's, if you're doing credit card offers, so there are these different affiliate networks, and so it's a two-step application. You apply to become part of the affiliate network, and basically that gives you access to window shop, so to speak, at all of the merchants who are administering their affiliate program in that network. And then within the network, you have to apply. You just sort of click a button or check a box, depending on the network, and you can apply to that specific merchant's affiliate program. From there, you'll get access to their tracking links, and it's as easy as putting this special URL on your site. My big word of encouragement is, if you're really going to get into affiliate marketing, I would say what you need to do first as a blogger is have some editorial guidelines. What do you write about, when, and why? Make sure you're clear on that, because it really does create a conflict of interest when you can write content that makes money for you. Yes, you can justify it that it adds value to your readers, but is it really a fit? You need to know what your guidelines are, and you also have to be clear on the disclosure. A site-wide disclosure is actually not good enough. You really need to be disclosing in any blog post where you have this conflict of interest and a material investment, like you're making money if people take the action you're encouraging them to take. You need to make a note of that in the blog post. I don't make it a big deal. I just put at the bottom something to the effect of, this blog post contains referral links that might generate a commission for Pocket Your Dollars at no cost to you. Please see my disclosure policy for more details.
Okay.
I'm very upfront with that. But the editorial guidelines are what will help you as a blogger be able to monetize without losing your voice, without people come to you. If people challenge you and say, you're in this for the money, you say, no way. These are my guidelines. If it fits and I can make money, great. If I can make money and it doesn't fit, I'm not doing it.
Gotcha. Okay. That sort of helps you keep a tight focus and
right.
Keep your integrity as well.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. So I mostly do banks, brokers, credit cards. I don't do a lot of deals that are sort of, fastly expiring like this.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of management, you know, because I have a sort of a small inventory of affiliate links on my site. And it's easy for us as a team to sort of keep track of that and update them when they need to be. Sort of keeping a small inventory, only, you know, 20 pages max on our site that have affiliate links that we would need to sort of manage. But it seems like your site has a volume of deals available, and you're constantly updating like 10 deals a day maybe sometimes.
Yeah.
So how do you maybe talk about how do you curate all those offers coming down the pipe, and then how do you manage it on the back end and make sure you've shut off the blog post that had the deal that already went out of
Let me start with the expiring thing and say, I don't do the best job in the world at swapping out all the links all the time because there are just so many. But one thing that I did, and it was one of these custom things that I had built, is sometimes there's an offer that I know, today is Valentine's Day, there are certain things that are only good on Valentine's Day. So I built into my system where I can set an expiration date and time, and it automatically then gets noted as expired. And so if you look in my archive, you'll begin to see that some of the post headlines are grayed out a little bit, they're only like 30% color, and they're prepended, and it says expired. And so we use that as our primary sort of way of informing the audience. This is done. We also have the ability to check a box and have something get noted as being out of stock and something similar happens. So we are big on that. And I invest money on a weekly basis. I pay people to keep some of my content current because I feel like otherwise you lose your audience if they feel like they still have to swim through things. So we have to manually do some of that. And I pay people and we have processes that we use. And then curating it, I mean, just like anything, we're humans. We're not doing this on a data feed basis. So we're reading lots of content on the web. We're reading all the emails we get from all of the merchants. And we're out shopping on these websites. Wow, they've got a deal or a sale. Let's go find some specific products that are quality products already on sale, combine this deal, and then write a blog post about it. It's very labor intensive. But I feel like I can feel good about it at the end of the day because I can tell people this is the value we're adding is this personal component. And I've been able to make the economics of it work that we can run this as a business and I can pay people to help do this and we can make a living doing it.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy for you. It's a great success story. Thank you so much for sharing what you shared today. If you're a follower of the FinCon blog, we'll also be releasing Carrie's talk on affiliate marketing, where she does more of a deep dive into some of these topics. Carrie, thank you so much again for being on. Is there anything I forgot to ask or anything you want to talk about? Maybe share your book with folks, how they can find out about your book.
Just one thing. So I wrote this book last year. It just came out in January. And here's one thing that I've learned about books, because I've bloggers will say, you know, how do you get a book? You know what the book publishers care about is your audience. If you have a large enough reach, a publisher will work with you to find a topic to write a book about. So that might sound kind of crass because you might feel like, but I have this burning passion and this needs to be said. Yeah, that's not really how they look at it so much. You could have a great message, but what they want is you to have a platform that you can sell books to. So know that. And that let that shape, if you really desire to write a book, you need to build a large platform and have influence and contacts that can help to sell books, or you're not going to get a book deal.
Excellent advice.
Thanks, Peter.
And congrats on the book and all the success with the site, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, in St. Louis, if not sooner.
That's right. All right, thanks, Carrie.
Bye.